Westlake Chiropractic.
Hi, CJ?
Yeah.
Ben Altadonna.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, how do you pronounce your last name?
Valenti.
Valenti. Valenti, got it. I spoke to another Italian yesterday, just coincidentally, the last name that I had asked. So do you go by CJ?
Yes, I do.
Okay, awesome. Is now a good time?
Yeah.
Great. Well, congratulations. And I know nothing about you or your practice, so I'm excited about talking to you, and I'm in no rush. I hope you aren't, but I think we should nail this in 20 minutes or so. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Where are you located?
I am in Westlake, Ohio, which is probably about, you know, about 20, 30 minutes west of Cleveland.
Oh, I used to go out there about twice a year in Macedonia.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it, except in the wintertime, because it was like kind of a little bit of a drive from the airport.
Yeah, a little bit it is.
A marketing legend lives there. His name is Dan Kennedy.
Dan,
yep,
uh-huh.
I think he still lives there. Anyway, how long have you been at that location?
Well, I've been here for 15 years.
Oh, great. And then did you practice somewhere else? Or
I've changed offices once in Westlake, but still just I've been here the whole time.
Well, how long have you been with us now?
I want to say I first started with you, I think it was around 2003 is when I first got your program and started doing your style of marketing and that, and then just kind of slowly kept with you throughout the years.
Huh. And you're a PBA now?
Yes.
What kind of practice do you have? Like, what technique? Can you kind of describe it for me?
Sure. I kind of have a little bit of a mix. I get bored just doing one thing all the time. I have got a typical chiropractic part of it where I treat all different kinds of patients with, you know, typical, you know, standard techniques, diversified, and Thompson and Cox and so forth. I also do a lot of neurologic rehabilitation just because it's interesting and it changes the day a little bit. And then I do a lot of clinical nutrition work. So it just kind of gives me a little bit of a mix where I can diversify my day a little bit and keep myself from getting too bored by doing one thing all day.
Can you describe the neurological rehab for me a little bit?
Sure. With that, I use a lot of laser techniques. It's really about just kind of learning to test and stimulate and work with the nervous system in all different ways. Sometimes you get the real complicated cases, like you'll see, you know, stroke victims or people who've had real serious neural injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I treat a ton of marathon runners, and so, you know, you get your athletes that'll come in, and you're doing things to them just to kind of, you know, peak their performance. You're going through everything you can test every testable nerve to see how it fires, and there's a lot of laser techniques that you can use to kind of pick those up again. And so it's neat. It's kind of a little niche that not too many people do around here, and so it gets me people driving, you know, a few hours to come around to have me do it to them, so it's cool.
And where did you get your formal training on that?
Actually in L.A. I got to fly out there towards you.
Yeah.
The main guy out there that teaches it, George Gonzalez, he does a lot of the neural rehab work, and so that's where I've probably done most of it. But I've trained with a guy named Jeff Spencer. He was the U.S. cycling team for the Tour de France. He was their doc for a long time, and he did a lot of neat work with Lance Armstrong. And so I've spent a lot of time with a lot of these guys just learning what they did and how they treated, and it's just pretty neat.
What's that doctor's name? Is it Carrick? Carrick?
Oh, no, so you're talking Fred Carrick?
Yeah, is that the same type of test you do?
No, not exactly. Now,
okay.
I have done some stuff with Dr. Carrick's work as well, this stuff is a little bit different. Carrick, as best I know, I don't believe he does anything with using the
laser. Laser, right.
I've done a lot of work with Carrick's work in that, and I know I kind of incorporate some of his information in with the laser people, and it's all good.
Yeah, it's all great stuff. But the nervous system is wild.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you've learned after school versus what you learned in school about the nervous system.
I don't think I'd do anything the same I did.
I mean, just imagine how great we would all be as chiropractors if we actually learned stuff that we can apply out of school when it comes to the nervous system. What a shame.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I get bored if I'm not learning something all the time, and so that's, you know, I know you talk a lot in your emails and that about, you know, constantly going out and learning more than just the, you know, just your required, you know, postgraduate education for your license, and I can't agree with you more. I've done that for years, and I think it's made a huge difference on my practice.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll admit it, I'm a better marketer than I am a chiropractor because I've spent so much time on it in the last 12 years. But if I was going to go back to practice, you know, I'd probably take 2 years before I would open an office and just probably do continuing ed or some postgraduate, you know, certification for the next 2 years, and just every weekend I'd be somewhere across the country learning stuff. What kind of clinical nutrition do you do?
Do a lot of cases. It can range from anything real simple. That was just kind of a personal interest of mine.
Yeah.
Probably 15 years ago that I got into just because of some own issues that I had myself and my family, and then it got into just in the beginning of just like, well, okay, just, you know, what are some things that really worked? I got real frustrated with, there's a lot of, speaking of marketing, there's a ton of marketing out there, and, you know, there's always somebody that's got some cure for everything.
No, you no doubt. I think everybody listening has a family member, especially at my age, maybe even a parent, that you go online and you research and, you know, how do you separate the BS from stuff that actually is helpful.
Well, you know, I did that a long time ago. I got real frustrated because all the things that you would hear people talk about all the time, that they would say, oh, I can do this and I can do that, I never saw any of it. And I got to the point where I thought the whole thing was just a bunch of BS. And so I wrote a letter one time to one of these clinical nutrition guys that travels around and teaches, and kind of was venting some frustration one day. And then I got a phone call one day. And I thought, oh, crap, what did I say?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, you know what, I understand your frustrations. Just come, just listen, and start to learn. And I'm like, all right. So I did, and then from him, I met several other guys that have been practicing for, you know, doing clinical nutrition for 40, 50 years, and started learning what these guys did was way different than anything I'd ever learned in school. I mean, I sat there and I felt like a kindergartner in a senior level college class.
Exactly.
I never heard of this stuff. So once I started learning all that, then as over the years, you learn to apply it in all different ways, and so I've just, you know, now I do anything from just real simple, like, okay, people want to know what is it that they can really do that is a really good thing. Or, you know, you get the cases that will call me and they go, I've got stage 4 lung cancer and 4 months to live, and what can I do? And, you know, and I've had several of those cases now where, you know, they live 2.5 years beyond what they were supposed to. And so mm-hmm. it's just some cool stuff that you can do with that. And it's no guarantee, but it's nice to be able to just kind of teach patients, look, you know, I'm not trying to sell you anything, but, you know, here's what you need to know. And you kind of build a reputation for learning a lot of endocrinology and biochemistry, so, you know, people wind up calling you for everything.
As far as any recommendations for listeners in terms of training in the clinical nutrition realm?
For me personally, I've really done well with using standard process. There's a guy, matter of fact, out in California, his name is Michael Dobbins. Dr. Dobbins has done, he teaches some phenomenal courses, and not only is he very entertaining, but it's just the material he teaches is very usable material. Done a lot of that. Then I've also worked with a lot of the docs out of Australia that have came in. There's a guy named Kerry Bone and another guy named Lee Carroll. They're guys that have come in and taught a lot of the herbal medicines like I've never heard it from in the United States before. And then the products that you can get from MediHerb out of Australia just blow away anything.
Say that again, please.
MediHerb is a company out of Australia.
Okay.
And they're just hands down, they blow away anything that I've ever used besides them.
All right, good. Well, you know, everyone listening can obviously Google these people and find them. When you started getting into neurological stuff and the clinical nutrition, I would imagine in the beginning you were working on your existing patients. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And then how long did it take until you got referrals to help, you know, patients outside of your database?
You know, what I started doing is I, you know, you would learn something, whether it was the neural stuff or the clinical nutrition stuff, and, you know, I would just pick something, just anything, that maybe I wanted to practice, and so I just started adding little tidbits into my daily routine. So, you know, a person comes in, and as opposed to just their typical adjustment, you know, like with the neural stuff, it was easy. You know, I just say, you know what, today we're going to just see how the nerves are firing. And they wouldn't have a clue what I'm talking about. And I would just pick a little packet of neurotests, and I'd run through them, and I'd start doing some laser things on them. And I wouldn't say a whole lot, you know. And they just kind of look at you like, how'd you do that? You know, and I'm just like, yeah, that's pretty cool, isn't it? And I just move on.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't really even say too much. Well,
yeah, and then you go hide in the x-ray developing room and go, darn, I can't believe that actually worked just now.
Yeah, well, you know, and so you just find little bits and pieces. And then with the clinical nutrition, It's not something that I would sit there and start, you know, jamming down people's throats. You know, if I would see things, you know, people would come in, and, you know, and they'd have, you know, leg cramps, you know, and I'd say, you know, that's a classical sign of a, you know, low tissue calcium levels, and, you know, here's some things you got to think about, you know, and just I'd throw little seeds in their head, and next thing you know, they're asking me, oh, hey, what did you say about that? You know, what can I do? And literally, it just kind of, you know, the more you learn as you're with patients, the more you spot little things, and then you start doing them, and they get interested.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, you start getting your referrals.
How long ago did you start the neuro?
I got real heavy into that. Probably 2005 is when I really first started to learn that.
Okay. And what percentage of your patients are how often do you get patients referred in for these more advanced cases?
Boy.
I mean, is that like half your practice now, or is it?
You know, it's probably I'd say a good. I mean, we do a lot of neuro work on. I mean, that's now, gosh, we do some bit of that, and just about everybody that walks in. The clinical nutrition, I'd say, is probably a good 30-40% anyways, you know, and that's not, we're not talking, I mean, those are all vary, because you'll get the full-blown cases where you get a lot of, you know, that's all maybe you're doing, because some people come in and they're all like, you know, I don't want to get cracked, I just want that, you know,
right.
That's cool, we'll do that, you know, and I just kind of slowly ease them along, but it's, you know, and it varies, but I mean, we're 100% referral practice, so that's, you know,
You know, I hope the doctors listening don't just say, oh, I'm going to do the neuro, I'm going to do the clinical nutrition, because they think that that's going to be easier to succeed in practice, or it's easier to generate more revenue. I think both of those, you need to be passionate about it.
You do.
And get into it for the right reasons, because if you're doing it just for the money, you might as well just stick with just being, you know, doing chiropractic, because you're going to be just as, the challenge will still be there regardless. So, you know, diversifying doesn't make it easier. You know, you choose these other things, in my opinion, as in terms of the right business model and strategy, and because it's the right thing to do, is because you're committed to becoming extremely proficient in it. Because it's not going to, I see too many doctors getting into different things, get distracted, and then they do it kind of half-assed, and they lose their identity. They don't know what to do because they never really was true to their core interest and passion, you know. So you got to get into things for the right reasons. It's not like just because you're doing it that if everybody does it, they're going to be equally successful.
Well, exactly. You know, when I with the neuro stuff and the laser, I mean, I've seen many of the local docs around here, you know, kind of try to piddle in it.
Yeah.
And that's just a sign of disaster, because it takes a lot of commitment and a lot of time to do it. But to do it right, you got to learn how to communicate and understand it, and to incorporate it with what you do. And I tell every new patient, I'm like, look, I'm going to look at you from three angles. You know, we're going to look at you neurologically. I'm going to look at you from a soft tissue perspective, and I'm going to look at you mechanically. And so, you know, I'm feeding them all the aspects. But it's kind of become my own little combo niche of what I do, and it works really well for me.
Right. You know, you mentioned at the beginning of the call, you know, and I don't know if you're just joking or serious, but sometimes I pick up on what people say, and you said, you know, because you got bored, you got into certain things, or you like to be stimulated, doing different things, and I think that's that's a valid reason for getting into stuff to some degree. I'm sure it's not the only reason why you chose to do the neurological stuff or the clinical stuff, but my question for you is, is that a demon that you have getting bored or not? I mean, is that?
I mean, to me, just for the probably the first several years, I just honestly got bored treating just neck pain, back pain. You know, it was just kind of like, to me, it was like the equivalent of working on an assembly line. You know, mm-hmm. just you know, and it's not that I hated it. It's just I needed to add something to it that was more challenging to my brain. You know, that made me think more. That you know, or two, I would get frustrated because I would see certain cases that would come in that I just kind of hit a wall, and I'm like, well, what am I going to do? And so, you know, I just kept hunting and learning, because I just like to learn, and so that's just part of my nature.
Yeah.
But as I would go through and I would learn something, and if I would get on, okay, that doesn't really apply to what I do. And so it took many years of kind of, you know, just hunting around until I kind of found what worked good for me, what jives with my personality, and like, so it is true, I did get bored, and if you force me to just do plain old adjusting every day, I would hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I can incorporate all these other things in with it, it makes my day just more exciting. It's more stimulating to me. You know, the cases are more challenging. I get to see things that I would never see. Cases that I get referred in, I would never get to be referred in had I not incorporated the clinical nutrition part or the neural part. Or so, like I said, that's just my personality.
Yep. Let's say in 5 years from today, if your practice is exactly the same as it is now, in terms of the mix of types of patients, the hours a week per week you work, the number of visits you see per week, your collections per month, would you be satisfied, or in 5 years would you like to see your practice different? And if so, how would it be different?
You know, I can't say that at this point anymore that I'm real stressed or worried about changing too many things. I've kind of liked it the way that, you know, it's taken 15 years to get here.
Yeah, it takes time.
I guess probably the only thing that I may do is just try to get maybe a little better and quicker at what I do. You know, I'm constantly learning better ways to communicate to people, you know, and I'll look back and I go, you know, why did I say it that way? Or I'll look at their reactions and I'll try to learn from it. So, you know, I can't say that I really see myself wanting to change it too much, you know, in the next 5 years. I'm always understanding that things can change and you have to adapt and so forth, and that's fine if that happens, but I can't say that it's really something I really want to change all that much.
Right. Have you found that your patients, I mean, you're 100% referral, pretty darn close to 100%.
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, obviously the quality of patient coming in is, you know, totally different than just someone off the street. So, you know, you have that credibility already. So they're listening and they believe what you say, I'm going to imagine. The majority of them, you know, aren't skeptical. Do you feel, though, if they weren't referred in, that, because sometimes when you explain, I would imagine the neurological stuff, you know, you can't use simple analogies. Sometimes you have to really basically educate them on what's going on. And so do you find that you have to educate them in a higher degree than a typical neck and back pain patient? And if so, are they paying attention? Are they interested? Or do you still get, or do you think it sometimes increases skepticism? I mean, what's the difference between a patient that you process that's just a, you know, musculoskeletal condition, as a real simple case, versus something more technical?
Sure. You know what? And that was one of the things that I learned over the years. In the beginning, I wasted way too much time trying to get everybody to understand what I understood, trying to teach everybody neurology and then teach it, you know, all this stuff. And I got to a point where I realized, I'm like, you know what, most of them don't care. They just want fixed. And so the way I've changed my style is that I introduce things to them in ways that I show it to them on them. So, in other words, I don't care anymore now today if it's a referral in or if it's, you know, somebody just walks in and I've never seen it before. It really doesn't matter to me because I've gotten to be really good at communicating and showing them as we do it. So I stopped playing teacher and sitting there as a lecturer because I know that just bored the hell out of them, most of them anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And I pull them over and I'm like, okay, so when I start doing my exam, I'm doing my exam and I'm kind of teaching at the same time very quickly. And so, you know, and I'm not afraid to tell them when I'm doing laser techniques. I mean, most of them, I don't care if they have been referred, most of them have never seen it before, you know, and I'll be the first to tell them. It's like, yeah, I know, this looks weird, you know, and it's just, you know, but I'll show them changes on themselves that are undeniable. And when they see themselves not be able to do things, and then 5 minutes later they can do all kind of things that they just couldn't do, I don't have to try to convince them anymore because they just convince themselves. And that model right there of showing people on them, getting them to say, hey, wow, how'd you do that? That's where I generate my referrals. That's where they just,
right.
That's where I get people coming left and right. And they're going, I don't know what this guy did, but you got to go see him.
Right.
And so that's kind of the gist of it.
Right. So it's basically proof.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, I would imagine your number of visits per patient is is probably lower than, that's why you get a lot of referrals, right? I mean, would you say under 20 visits in the average, maybe even less than that?
Talking about in a day, you mean?
Oh, no, I mean, if the average new patient that comes in, number of visits to get them better.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's, I mean, it's, I kind of use more of a model where it's a little bit slower model. There was a guy who one time, I kind of made me laugh, but I agree with this saying. He said, you know, he goes, I don't want all your money. I just want a little bit of it for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of started to laugh because I said, you know, that's kind of what I think. I don't do high visits. I definitely am more on your model where I work with people to kind of get them well as quick as I can. And I don't want to see them for 9 million visits. And to be honest with you, I mean, in my beginning settings, I might see them for, you know, maybe 5 to 10 visits or so, and then I might be done for a while. But the difference is they come back to me, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, hey, if you're feeling fine, that's cool. Go as long as you can, and you call me when you need me. I'm here for you. And that's another biggie. I get a ton of referrals because people go, yeah, I came here because I heard you don't make me come back for the rest of my life. And I don't. And I just tell them, you know, I work for you. When you need me, come get me. And so consequently, we do. We see, I might see that lifetime value of that patient has expanded tremendously from in the past, a long time ago, when I first in practice, and I would put people on treatment plans, and that, you know, when that treatment plan was over, I'd lose them. You know, I'd hardly ever see them again. Now, I do what they like, and they feel comfortable. They refer me in a ton of patients, and I'll see them over their lifetime and their family and so forth, and it was effortless.
Well, I think the doctors are resistant to that because the ones that don't believe that that model would work, I think deep down it's because they know, and I hate to say it, but they know that if they are seeing patients less visits, then they have to be actually more proficient, you know. I mean, they really have to have their act together, you know, clinically. And so if you get someone like the old model, if you get someone to prepay for $2,500 for 40 visits, then they're going to, you know, they're going to stay because they paid. But, you know, that's kind of a sad way to maintain compliance is, you know, I'm going to take your money and now we got to eat up the visits. And that's just, it's just a bad model, and that's why they don't get referrals and have to spend a lot of money to get new patients in the door.
You know what kind of makes you laugh a little bit is, and I don't know what you've seen, but I know in over the last 15 years, any times I get a lot of chiropractors that'll come to me to get adjusted, and I'm like, isn't it always funny that, you know, when one of my colleagues, you know, colleagues or buddies, you know, he goes out and slips on the ice, you know, shoveling snow, you know, he'll call me up, oh, hey, man, can you adjust me really quick?
Right.
And I'm like, wasn't that funny that they're not putting themselves on a six-week treatment plan? They're coming in to get adjusted.
Right.
It feels good, and I'm gone. I've just taken that same model and said, you know what? If it's good for us, it's good for our people.
Yeah.
And they like it better.
No doubt. You know, that's so funny. I mean, look, I again, like I said at the beginning of the call, I'm a pretty decent marketer, and I hire people to write a lot of the content because I don't have the skill to do so. The majority of my members are better chiropractors than me. So, you know, I'm good at one little thing. I provide that service. So when I do member of the month interviews, you know, I learn more than the people I'm talking to, and hopefully the listeners are learning as well. But that's yeah, you know, it's so much easier just to do the right thing. I have a chiropractor, Rob Katona. I mentioned him before, great guy, Gonstead doctor. You know, I know I should, I mean, I can go to any town in USA and get free chiropractic care for the rest of my life, you know. And the funny thing is in Rob's office, I can walk there. It's literally 6 blocks down to Prospect Fork, make a right, left side, 2 blocks, 6 blocks from my house. I can walk there. And I get in there real, and I'm serious. I get in there maybe once every 6 to 8 weeks, and that's not good. I mean, I think I should get adjusted because I work out hard. I'm sitting all day. I should probably I probably should go in there twice a month. Would probably be good for me. And it's just I'm human. You know, I'll use that as an excuse. I don't know. I just don't get in there like I should. And I know the benefits of chiropractic, and so does that mean I'm a bad person or I'm incongruent or I'm, you know, it's just my reality. And everybody has a reason or excuse or justification, whatever you want to say, but the statistics are what they are. And so you got to just work with them. And so I think it makes sense. He has a lot of patients. He has all referrals. I must have referred Rob 50 people, I'd say, in my lifetime. My dad goes to Rob, my staff goes to Rob, my brother used to, now he moves, he doesn't go there anymore, but and my neighbors go to him, and he, like he says, I mean, I've been going to Rob for 15 years, you know, and so has a lot of people I referred to him. And that's a stable practice. And how's your overhead? I would imagine it's reasonable, right? As terms of percentage?
It's very reasonable. You know, and also what I've done in here just to kind of help with all that. I mean, one, I have two part-time employees, you know, that run all my front desk and so forth. I've got two full-time massotherapists that I just rent space from. They're not my employees. They just run their business out of my office.
I'm sorry, they're what? Who are they?
I have two full-time massotherapists.
What's that?
A massage therapist.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know, it's a nice little kind of relationship where, you know, they see their own patients, I see my own patients, but we both refer back and forth.
So they pay you a fixed fee, yeah, rent each month?
Yeah, it's just a fixed fee. That way there's no worried about anybody thinking that
something. Do you mind if I ask how much you charge them a month?
It's about $500 a month.
Okay. So they each get a room?
Yep, they each get a room, and it's their room. They do whatever they want to it. They can work as many hours. I don't care if they see one patient or 100 patients.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, it's when they do that, it's, you know, like I said, they're running their own business in my office. And so it works out very well. And then actually, I also have an attorney that's in my office.
Uh-huh.
Now the funny thing is she's not a PI attorney, she's not a workers' comp attorney, she's an estate attorney. And it's funny because, you know, she gets a ton of my patients that she does, you know, wills and trusts and healthcare power of attorneys, but she sees a ton of people that it forces people to walk into my office, and at first they're like, why am I coming to a chiropractor's office? But because she's a patient of mine, she talks me up all the time to them, so I wind up getting new patients from
her. Yeah, it's probably a lot weirder for her than it is for you. You could just, you know.
Well, it used to be. But
that's funny.
You know, it's like this whole little niche, it actually works really well. So I got three people in my office that are all paying me rent. You know, so it really, between, you know, just being smart and keeping overhead low, and then having that, it really keeps my overhead pretty low.
How many square feet is your office?
2,000.
So 2,000, and you're getting $1,500 a month in rent from,
yep,
massage therapists and an attorney?
Yeah.
And you don't, do you own the building?
No.
Okay.
No, actually, I just rent the space too.
So do you have two massage therapy rooms?
Yep.
And a room for the attorney?
Yep.
And then there's plenty enough space for your practice?
Oh, easily, yeah.
How many adjusting rooms or treatment rooms do you have?
I have one main adjusting room that I work out of, and it's also where I keep my X-ray room in there. I kind of made one giant room for myself since I didn't want to go running all over the place.
Right.
So I have one giant room that's my exam room, my adjusting room, my X-ray room. Everything, I can do everything I need to do.
How many square feet is that room? Maybe a 400, size of a garage, typical garage?
Not that big.
300?
You know, maybe, you know, gosh.
So maybe half that?
I'd say probably half the size of a two-car garage.
Yeah, okay.
It's not that big, but it's just set up very efficient.
Yeah.
And then I have a therapy suite that's up in front that I have. I've got my DRX and I've got my, you know, stim units and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set up so that my front desk girls are they kind of it's done very efficiently so that the girls behind the desk can watch out into the waiting area. They can watch into the therapy suite. They can handle a lot of things at one time very efficiently. So it keeps my overhead down.
Well, you know, people go where people go. It's nice when you have these other people in your office that are paying you rent. As you know, when a new patient comes in, they see bodies coming in and out of there all the time, and
exactly.
They don't know necessarily that. You know, they're coming from a massage and attorney's office versus your care. I mean, is the attorney, does she have her name on the front door?
No.
Okay.
What we do is we have, like, I mean, it's, you know, only my name and then is on the front door. I mean, none of the therapists, nobody else's name on there, so it's all just mine. Then we have a generalized kind of a, you know, waiting room area where everybody's, you know, clients, patients, whatever, they all kind of park there until...
Yeah.
They're ready, and so then the attorney's office is kind of off to the one side, and the therapist and mine are all back, and so you're right. I mean, there could be, you know, there could be eight people sitting around that waiting room, but nobody has any clue
right.
who they're going
to. Actually, everybody gets the benefit from
it. Yeah, and it looks really busy. Exactly. People come back and they're going, man, you're busy today. And I just go, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have an audiologist. I ran into an audiologist for many years, and, you know, it's healthcare, so maybe it's just people might think it's not a big stretch, but really, if you think about it, what does it matter? So,
right.
It doesn't, you know. And I have right now we have two offices downtown now because we need more space, and one office that we're in right across the hall is we have an attorney. There's a chiropractor in my office that we I don't own the building, the second space that we have where we do where Jesus works, but we there's lots of different people, and there's no common area. It's just kind of a hallway with a bunch of offices, but it works out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. You know, a lot of people should rent more rent space. If you're not using it, why not? You know, money. If it cuts down your overhead,
you know, it gives me a chance to have a bigger office that I don't have to pay for.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, we share common areas, but still, I mean, I wouldn't do it any other way now. It's just where you have to find the right people. I mean, I will say over the years, I've probably went through maybe 7 or 8 different massage therapists, you know, and ones that are like, okay, that was a wrong mistake. And you learn. Now the two that I have with me, the one's been with me since 1998, and then the other one's been with me probably for, gosh, I want to say probably 2003-ish. And the attorney's been with me now and here for, I think this is her second year. So
Good. So what have you learned the most from me, would you say, through the years that's helped you?
Boy, one, you know, the communication skills that I have learned to do has probably been huge. You know, keeping that contact with patients has been huge. Like I said, I always rant and rave about the newsletters. I'm like, you know, of anything and everything, to me, those are hands down the absolute most golden thing. Now it kills me. I've gotten so many patients, whether increased visits or whatever, just from those newsletters. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, I'm dragging it up because now we do a lot of email once now, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I still mailed a lot of them out. You know, and I would even kind of tweak little things and make my own little thing. I would kind of add to it sometimes with my clinical nutrition thing.
Good.
But, you know, it's really just that staying in contact with people, that being real with them, being genuine with them, you know, I guess that's been probably my number one thing that I can say that I've really learned, and it's done
Yeah.
well over the years.
Yeah, and I learned the same thing from, like, Dan Kennedy and Jeff Paul in the old days. It's like being real in terms of your communication being, I guess real is the right word, you know, real, organic, authentic, not trying to be too professional in terms of the high production value of your content, of your communication, or how you deliver the message. Because it starts looking like everybody else's stuff, you know. And so I don't do a lot of internet marketing to promote my business because then I look like an internet marketer.
Yeah.
I just want to look like another guy that's helping doctors out. It's almost like, you know, I have a practice, I'm sharing my stuff with you, and here's what I use type of thing versus trying to do a lot of internet marketing stuff. So, you know, I don't like to use fancy software programs. I mean, I use Microsoft Word way beyond what it was intended to be in terms of being able to move words around in text boxes. And I mean, I know all the tricks now, but, yeah, I like to keep my business all about the meat and potatoes and not, you know, about too much of the sizzle, even though, you know, we've been told, you know, sell the sizzle, not the steak. And I get that to a point, but once you have a customer, you got to be able to, you know, deliver the goods. And,
you know, I wasted more money. I mean, I can't believe how many thousands of dollars I wasted on stupid forms of marketing, advertising, you know, in the beginning, especially when I was first new and you know, struggling to kind of stay afloat. And, you know, and just when I, from the long, you know, from, like I said, back in, I think, 2003, when I just started to understand the type of marketing you were talking about, and I used to do more of that when I was trying to get more people in actively, and now just by your newsletters, keeping in contact with people, you know, for me, you know, I my database isn't, you know, too huge. I mean, I've got a 4,000 patient database that you know, we're sending things out to, you know, a good chunk of them all the time. And it's really made it so I just sit back and it kind of takes care of itself. I don't have to stress about, you know, oh gosh, I need to do this or I got to do that. It's just, you know, you just, like you said, you keep in contact with them,
yeah.
Put your name in front of them, and they remember you.
Well, when you say 4,000, everybody listening, that's huge to them. That's like 10 times the average chiropractor. So that tells me one of two things. Either you've been doing things right for the long time, which I hope is the reason. You know, I don't think you just that one day said, I'm going to start mailing to a bunch of old case files that I haven't communicated with. So you've been communicating with people since early 2000, then.
That's for a long time.
It's just. So it's been like seven, eight years then.
Oh yeah.
That you haven't ignored them and you've been consistent with.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. And you know, but it takes time to get up to 4,000.
Yes, it does.
It doesn't happen overnight. And then even, you know, like you know the how I marketed in the old days. And the thing is, what I've seen that has changed, because things do change, and maybe it'll come back to the way it was someday, but, you know, things have changed so much in the last 5 years in terms of, and the demographic has changed. It's just people, it's hard to keep their attention these days. So I have found that my type of marketing, the reason why I've changed things a lot, number one is I don't want to make things too complex for my doctors. They don't have time to learn what I learned, just like your patients don't have time to learn what you know. Like in the old days, I made the same mistakes. I used to try to teach chiropractors what I know about marketing. And deep down, you know, in the last 5 years, I've relaxed a lot about it. And now it's like just give them the fish as much as you can and don't bother them with the details, or they get overwhelmed and it creates anxiety and they get frustrated. Plus, the things I used to teach, like the free reports with the 800 numbers, it's just not as effective anymore. The market's changed, and just the delivery of the message has to be different. So it's almost better to market to your patient base more frequently, as inexpensively as possible. You know, if you can segment your list and you want to spend more money, that's fine. But the key now is, I think, you take that plus, I believe, the relief care model, which, again, you know, I've just learned more. I'm more wiser than I was 10 years ago when I got in this business of teaching other doctors. And back then, you know, it was what everybody, you know, what I was learning was being introduced to many, many niches, and it was a good thing back then. But now my customers have changed, their wants have changed, what they're willing to actually do has changed, their budgets have changed, the economy's changed, and so I've had to totally reinvent my business to adapt to the wants and demands of the marketplace, you know. And who knows what I'm going to be doing in 10 years from now or 5 years from now. I have no idea. I hope PBA just gets better and I think of new things. And, you know, I'm always trying to do that, but to stay within the price point that I sell. I mean, if I charge everybody $6.97 instead of $4.97, I'm sure I can come up with a lot more stuff, but I just don't want to do that. And I don't think they want to spend more. If they did, I would think of other things to do. I'm just, at this point, I don't think it's worth that. And I'd have to charge people more if it was, depending on what it was, to fulfill the product and pay people to create for me. But anyway, it sounds like you're doing well. You know, I don't know, have we ever spoken before, or have we met at a seminar?
I met you down in Tampa one time back with the
at Axiom.
Seminar at Axiom. And then I was down in the PI seminar down in Atlanta, and I kind of saw you briefly down there.
Oh, okay.
That's probably about it.
So what do you do when you're not working? You have children at home?
No, I don't have any kids. So I like to golf and I like to run and you know, exercise, go to the gym, stuff like that. You know, read a lot, go to a lot of seminars.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff like that.
Well, good. Well, you sound like you got your act together and you sound healthy and content, and your patients obviously are. How many referrals do you average a month?
We probably average anywhere from I'm thinking 7 to 10 a week. So, you know,
that's significant. Keeps you busy.
It's not bad. Like I said, you know, I don't have the kind of, you know, practice where I, you know, I'm not like the assembly line where I've got these little 5 minute visits. You know, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm doing significant things in each visit, so it takes me a little bit longer. So, you know, for me, you know, a packed full day, I can only see maybe, you know, 25, 30, you know, 35
yeah.
if I really push.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But you know what? That's okay with me. I don't want to see 50 people a day. I don't have any.
Right. Well, your referrals will go down too. You found that sweet spot. Everybody has, you have to match your clinical skills and the results and what it takes to get them better with the visits, and the fees have to be right. Everything's got to be right, you know. And it sounds like you're right in the, right there for yourself. Hey, CJ, thanks for your time. Congratulations again. I hope you you got my email, BenDC@AOL. So keep in touch, and if there's anything I can do, just let me know.
Okay, Ben.
All right, man. Thanks for your time.
You betcha.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.